When it comes to your finances, go for the credit card that's always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. Real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Watch and listen to commercial-free episodes of StarTalk on StarTalk Plus. Sign up at patreon.com/StarTalkRadio. Hey, did you know that StarTalk has a YouTube channel? Subscribe now for video versions of your favorite StarTalk episodes, along with video shorts on all sorts of topics. We've got videos on flat Earth, nuclear power, aerogel, supermoons, asteroids, hurricanes, and so much more. Go to youtube.com/StarTalk. And while you're at it, hit the subscribe button and hit the bell so you can be notified every time we publish a new video. Again, that's youtube.com/StarTalk.
This is StarTalk. I'm your host, Neil deGrasse Tyson, your personal astrophysicist, and this is a special sports edition. We have with us, as my co-host, the dynamic duo from Playing with Science, Gary O'Reilly.
Hey.
Chuck Nice.
Hey.
The two co-hosts of that esteemed show.
Thank you.
And who did you bring into my office today?
Well, it's quite simple, really. Today, our guest joins us from Mount Olympus. Yep, he is a god. Some say that he refused the lead in the Fast and the Furious movie franchise because they were just too damn slow. And when posing for his portrait in the National Portrait Gallery, all they got was a blur.
Nice. I see what you did there.
Did you? Yeah, thank you.
Exactly. He's actually the only man in history to win a Formula One championship, an Indy championship, NASCAR at Daytona championship, and he is voted driver of the 20th century. Okay, so there you go, man. I don't think it gets much better than that.
I don't think it does. Yeah. He is a national treasure, both here in the US and in Italy. He is the man, the living legend. He is Mario Andretti.
There he is. I give him an applause.
All right, yeah.
Wow, for sure. Wow, how do we live up to that?
You already have.
Yeah.
We're done. We're
okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. All right, let's step back and explore some of your early life. If I'm not mistaken, as an eight-year-old, you find yourself in a refugee camp in Italy? Unbelievable.
Well, yes, indeed, and unbelievable to some degree, because we were refugees in our own country.
Wow.
Because the territory where I was born, which is the peninsula of Istria, mm-hmm. on the eastern side and the northern side of the Adriatic, was occupied by Yugoslavia after the war.
Yeah. You know,
Italy obviously lost the war. And so that became a communist occupied country under hardline communism, and there was a choice for all the inhabitants of the area to remain and succumb to communism or leave to maintain the Italian citizenship and leave everything behind, everything that you own. You just you were allowed, given a lorry, a truck, you know, to put whatever belongings you could just transport with that and leave. And then, so we were transported into what they call a displacement camp in Udine, which is on the other side
camp.
Of Trieste.
That's all.
How
it
nice.
Is. Yeah. It wasn't a concentration camp.
No.
It was a displacement camp.
Mm-hmm. Which after there, you were displaced to another area in Italy, wherever a city where they would absorb, say, 1,200, 1,500, because there were, I think it was estimated somewhere around close to 190,000 inhabitants of that area They wanted to leave. They left, actually.
Yeah. This is part of the fallout of the Second World War that I don't think they teach us in our schoolrooms.
No.
All the edge work of what's going on from the Soviet Union, what did they get? What did the winners and losers get?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only thing you learn in American schools about World War II is it ended with USA, USA. Yeah, that's basically it.
Well, not only talk about teaching, actually the government was not really learning exactly telling anyone that we are refugees, we're Italians, you know, from a land that was lost. They were actually ashamed of the fact that they lost that territory. So we arrived in the city. We spent, where we wound up was in Lucca, in Tuscany, beautiful city. Uh-huh. And so basically we were like, there was somewhere like 1,200 people in one building that used to be an old monastery and all of that. And again, you know, under basic, fairly primitive conditions. But nevertheless, you know, no one knew in the area what we were. Well, what are we, gypsies? Were we what? You know, so it took a long time for people, you know, to realize, you know.
What age are you at this point?
Eight.
8 years old. Where did you know you had a passion for racing, for driving, for motorsport?
About 8 and a half.
There's a story that you used to run around the kitchen with a frying pan acting as a steering wheel. Yeah, is that true?
Indeed, exactly. And in fact,
I have a
twin brother, Aldo. Yes.
All right.
He and I obviously had the same passion. One day, one would be the driver and the other would be the car. The guy that was the car was holding the lid, you know, on the knob. And the other guy was steering, so you're backing up. So the way you're steering, you know, you're just actually learning how to drive, right? You know, and you hope you don't run into furniture, you know. But you know, there was something, I don't know why, still to this day, what really drew me into that, you know, to motor racing and to be fascinated with something like that was the furthest thing from the makeup of our family, quite honestly.
You find yourself in the USA in 1955. Your twin brother Aldo and you sneak out. You rebuild cars and go dirt racing.
Yes.
What did your mother and father think?
That's the point. We obviously, when we arrived to America, we found out there's a racetrack right in the town where I still live today.
And what town was that?
In Nazareth, Pennsylvania.
Nazareth, Pennsylvania.
Yes. And so 2 years after we arrived, we started building a car that we planned to race there by the time we were 21. So we had plenty of time, but the car was finished when we were 19, 2 years later. And so we're ready to race, but there's no way we could ask or even talk about it to my dad, because my dad, all he knew about racing at the time was what was, you know, pretty much publicized, such as, you know,
car
fatalities.
Crashes. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And then they were too often, you know, and too popular. And so basically he thought there was something crazy. Basically, he did not understand or care about the sport, but we already had the burning passion, you know, that was inside of us. And we were going to do this regardless. So the bottom line is we did the whole first season without my dad knowing. Now, my mother, who was a kick in the... I mean, she was really... Yep. She was much different. She was... basically, but she was caught in the middle. So she didn't know directly, but you know, mothers, they sense things.
Oh, yeah.
They knew something was going on. So she sort of stayed quiet behind. But we were winning some races. Actually, my brother won the very first race, and so did I, that we competed in on a local level. And my dad at work, you know, the boss go, "Hey, Gigi, man, you did a great job," you know. So my dad had no idea, language barrier, you know, that was his salvation.
Thank God.
And thank God. So he thought that they were just praising him for his work, and he go, yeah, good, good. You know, so the bottom line is, you know, we escaped all that until the very last race of the season, where it was an invitational. You had to be third in points within tracks of 150-mile radius to be invited at Hatfield, Pennsylvania for the last races. So we both actually were eligible for that. Mm-hmm. And so I got a ride with somebody else, and Aldo drove our car, which was, that was a modified race. Our car was a sportsman, so it was not as powerful, but it was still a fast one. And he was, during a qualifying heat, he was trying to beat the track champion at that place, which was Freddie Adams. And on and somehow he got into the guardrail, and he had a, you know, a terrible end-over-end accident. And he they gave him his last rites that night. And he had a skull fracture, the base of his skull fracture. He was in a coma for weeks. And but anyway, so I, obviously I had to call my mom.
I would think
my mom. Mm-hmm. So I said, "Mom,
but only a race car driver could speak like that. Say, yeah, he's fractured his skull. He's in a coma. But anyway, let me get to the real part." another day at the track. Okay,
I'm just telling you how my dad.
He's just telling how it goes.
Occupational hazard.
I'm telling you how my dad found out.
Skull fracture, in a coma. But let me continue with the story. Okay, go on.
No, I want to be brief because I can go on and on. Uh-huh. You know, but I said that's how my dad found out, and obviously he felt vindicated. You know, I figure, see, I told you. You know, they're going to bring you home with in a body bag and all that, but. The bottom line is that a whole hell let loose when he found out that even while Aldo was recovering, I was building a new car. I was building a new car for the following season. And when we started racing the following season, it was very, 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 very
so you're
quiet
your own
at home.
So engineer, mechanic, and driver.
Well...
that means yes.
I don't think
that
I
would. Well means yes.
So actually, you're getting science education on the job.
That was more like it. And you know, we assembled four other buddies, and there's always the geek in the crowd, right? One guy that actually steered us in the right direction, his name was Charlie Mitch. He's no longer with us, you know. But he knew what we needed to do, and we, you know, as driver, I learned how to weld and all that sort of thing, you know. But as far as mechanics, we just improvised, you know, the best possible way. But somehow we did a pretty good job because here's the idea. We built something that was different from what they were running at the local racetrack. Mm-hmm. And the idea was if you build something, it has to qualify within rules, you know, but it said we have to do something like NASCAR. NASCAR had the time where the Hudson cars were very popular on the short tracks. So that's what we built. So when we showed up with something very different. And then we had, in those days, you know, the race drivers didn't have proper, you know, driving suits or anything. You know, we showed up, we bought two driving suits from Italy, Sala Sport, you know, with all the zippers and everything.
Italians.
We showed up.
Got to do it in style.
And then we said that we used to race in Italy in a Formula Junior, you know, which didn't exist. and so to be accepted, you know, because they said, you know, why should we let you race, you know, that sort of thing.
Right.
So we said, oh, you're the Italian kids and so forth. So we played the part, if you will.
Right.
And that's how it all got started.
That's pretty great, though. It's just like, why should we let you race? You don't know these guys? They're the Formula Junior champions.
Then they must be good.
I'm so sorry. We didn't know.
By the way, that one haunted us for a while.
So let's jump forward a little bit. You've got your smarts in engineering now. You're learning how to handle a car. You end up moving into a bigger deal, and Holman Moody, which is NASCAR. That must have been a whole new ballgame for you.
Well, indeed. I mean, at the top level of our sport, obviously we have several disciplines, and my objective was always to be in single seaters, open wheel cars, which is usually to me that's a thoroughbred of the racing cars. But as you go on, you know, by the time I pretty much was able to express my desire to do some NASCAR, something else. I was already established in, you know, in the circuit, you know, in the national, I was already national champion, you know, in 65, my very first year actually at the top level of Indy cars. And I had a great relationship with Ford. We were, you know, Ford engines and so forth, and I was winning some races. And then, and of course, Ford, you know, was very involved in NASCAR, you know, as one of the manufacturers, which they still are today. And so I expressed a desire to do some NASCAR races, go to the, actually to the race, which is the Daytona 500. Uh-huh. And they accommodated me, and they put me with the top team, with the official team, the Holman and Moody, which fielded. Actually, my teammate was what they called, it was Freddie Lorenzen. He was called at the time the golden boy of NASCAR, you know. So I was with, you know, with the right team at the right time,
I suppose. What do you think he was learning from a point of view, physics, to be able to succeed in NASCAR? Maybe not.
Well, of
realized.
Course, they're different. I mean, they're different shaped vehicles, right?
Yeah.
I mean, everything is different. So did you feel that, obviously they are different. What does it feel like as a driver to drive such a different vehicle?
Between NASCAR and Indy.
Yeah. Well, that's
or open wheel.
Or open
and,
wheel and NASCAR.
Yeah, that actually, that's the trick and that's the challenge. You know, because it's like an animal trainer. You know, you got a tiger, you got a, you know, something, a cheetah here. Or
and they're
something.
Both what they are.
And they're both what they are. But, you know, there's some similarity how you approach it, but they're different characters. Mm-hmm. So a racing car is something like that. Each racing car has its own personality. And if you're curious, like I always was, you know, even early on in my career, I was specializing. My specialty was and still is, you know, open wheel single seaters. Right. But I love to see what was going on at the top level on the other side, you know, which is the stock cars. But here's the other thing that I think I realized early on, too, that in order to be able to migrate to the other side.
Mm-hmm. The other side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the other side.
We were crossed over.
Right. The other side.
Yeah. I am your father.
You better be looking for, you know, to be with a top team because... You know, I don't think you can be the best shoe in the world, the best driver in the world, unless you have a car that's capable with a team that's got a car that's obviously equipment that's capable of bringing results. You're not going to get results.
So know? What so little tricks did you learn in NASCAR that were enabled you to be so successful in other areas of
racing? Because we wouldn't expect that.
Yeah.
Necessarily.
Well, that's a good question, actually, because as I said...
He's capable of a good question every now and then.
Every now and again.
Yeah. Well, actually, what makes sense is the fact that, as I said, each side has a different characteristic.
Yeah.
But there's similarities as well. Mm. You know, so you always learn. I learned something in one area that applies, mm-hmm. and I said, oh... You know, and I always felt that I learned something, you know, to just expand my knowledge, you know, as far as understanding the dynamics of the car, such yeah. as whether it's aerodynamics or mechanical, on the mechanical side of the car. So,
car-carrying geek from way back.
Well,
you had to take him in the geek club. If he's thinking about that, and yeah. applying and, right. and corresponding... What's the same and what's different?
The difference is, you know, geeks who are just like science for the sake of liking science, the worst that can happen to them is they might miss a fact. the difference for Mario is if he
could be jettisoned
right.
into Earth
he,
orbit.
Exactly. He misses a bend, yeah.
Yeah, miss a bend.
Right, and so I think
okay, it's cost.
His love of science is a little intense
more, okay.
and necessary.
So there's stories about drivers who can sit in a car, take it a lap round the track, and they'll come back and tell you exactly where is and isn't tire pressure. Some things are missed at the back. There's something not quite. How soon, I'm guessing you had it at quite an early age, how soon were you able to apply that to cars?
Well, it's about experience, though. You know, it's right. You have to have, I mean, it doesn't just come out of the air. You know, you just have to have that practical experience to be able to identify what's going on, and then as you make the changes, this works, this doesn't work, and so on and so forth. But it's a
it
work.
Becomes one with the car.
But it's a work. Yes, indeed.
Very zen.
It's a work in progress. Yeah. But you know, a race car. The other thing is an animal that has so many thousand adjustments, if you will, and the closer, the more you understand about what really works, the dynamics, what suits your style even, the better off you are. I always said that it's the same thing as a patient going to a doctor.
Uh-huh.
You know, you go to a doctor and you say, hey, doc, I'm really sick, you know, and okay, what's wrong? I don't know, I just don't. So what's the doctor going to take him forever to do tests or whatever? If you go in there and explain to the doctor, this, and that. You know what? There's something here, you know, in my head. Mm-hmm. Then they go right to the thing. So right. It's the same thing with the driver and the engineer, to have that relationship, because you can't do it alone. You have to have a relationship with your engineer, the one that actually can fix the car.
Yes.
And the more, the closest he understands the way you're expressing yourself, the better off you're going to be.
You are the engineer's access to the performance of the car.
Exactly. Right. Okay. Exactly.
And now I know why I'm not.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me, too. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me, too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true.
Do you find yourself searching for true crime podcasts that are different from what you're always recommended? Do you want to make a real difference in the cases that you're following? Well, you're a crime junkie, and I'm Ashley Flowers, the creator and host of the number one true crime podcast, Crime Junkie. There are hundreds of episodes already available, and each Monday we dive into the details of cases spanning from some of the most infamous to those that you have never heard covered before. Listen to Crime Junkie podcast now, wherever you're listening.
My medical care is lousy. Because I keep going to my mechanic and
listen,
asking
I'm
him
sick.
What's wrong with me.
That's that what that is.
It just gives you, just sends you for an oil change.
Yeah.
All right. On that note, let us take a break. We'll be coming back with the fabulous Mario Andretti. Don't forget, this is racing legend that we've got an opportunity to talk to, a unique heritage. We're going to take that break. More from the driver of the century. Yes. He will be with us still when we get back.
Over 300 people have been guests on Star Talk. Find your faves or discover new comedians and experts at StarTalkRadio.net. Search for a person and find every episode they've ever been on. Again, that's every comic co-host, science expert, and celebrity guest. Search them all at StarTalkRadio.net.
We're back. Star Talk. sports edition. This one from a special part of the Sportiverse. Brought to you by my special co-hosts from Playing with Science.
Yeah.
Gary O'Reilly, Chuck Nice.
That's right, sir.
And look what you found walking around outside in the street.
I know.
Aimlessly.
Aimlessly.
Like
we
the guy
snatched
that...
him from the street.
Yeah.
Pulled him in.
Yeah.
Mario Andretti.
Only in New York.
Only in New York. So before the break, we were speaking about...
Driver of the century.
Driver of the century.
I didn't know that was a thing. And now, of course, it's him. Who else would that be?
But we've only got so far. You've emerged out of dirt track racing into Indy, into the NASCAR scene. You're beginning to establish yourself. But as you said already...
This is the 60s and 70s.
No, we're still in the 60s.
Still in the 60s.
Oh, yeah. And so the open-wheeled racing, you said, your passion. And if you want to race open-wheeled, there's only one place to go. You come back to Europe. Not an easy place to come to because there's only so many rides. There's only so many teams. You find yourself at Lotus. Colin Chapman is the guy in charge. We've had world champions before you in the likes of Jim Clark. But at this time in 1968, there's a special thing happening at Lotus. Would you please explain to us what that exactly is?
Well, here's 1968 is when I go back. In 1965, when Jim Clark won Indianapolis, I finished third, and I was Rookie of the Year, which is actually something that it's a title that you can only achieve once, you know, the first time. And but it's got some some importance to it, you know. And anyway, at the banquet after everything, and we're saying our goodbyes, I said to Colin, I said, Colin. Someday I would like to do Formula One. And Colin says, Mario, he says, whenever you think you're ready, you call me.
Ooh, wow.
And that's when the call came in 1968, 3 years later. And he said, right.
We all should have someone like that in our lives.
Yeah.
When you're ready, call me.
Yeah. Yeah. Or even just call me.
Anybody.
I'll take that. I'll just take somebody saying, hey, man, call me.
But he took the call. He accepted the call.
3 years later, okay, 1968.
Now, can you imagine actually, you know, as a kid dreaming? Because my ultimate dream was also, you know, to devote part of my career to Formula. I had a great career going here in the United States, you know, but...
get it made in the shade here.
But I you know, Formula One was always in the back of my mind and all of that. So I says, at a certain time, when I feel that I'm ready, okay. And Colin was there, you know, and it was amazing because, you know, obviously here again, one of the top teams, you know, that he would have equipment
so
capable.
So they can slot you.
Yeah, he said, I will enter the third car, which he did, of course. Ooh. And, you know, Graham Hill was one of the drivers at the time.
Another world champion.
Yeah. But anyway, so my debut at the U.S. Grand Prix at Watkins Glen, I was on pole.
And you took pole in your first race?
Took pole in my first race.
Wow. I'm interested to know what made you know you were ready, because that is something that people can benefit from. You know, you never want to go too early.
Chuck, that's actually another good question here, because the reason I said I like to do it, and when he said when you're ready, because in IndyCars at the time, the primary action was basically on oval tracks. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't a lot of road racing. And and little by little, in that series, they started introducing some road races. But here again, with the relationship I have with Ford was embarking in the new Le Mans program. They're doing a film about that. It's coming on, you know, I think right now. Ford wants to beat Ferrari at Le Mans.
And, everybody wants to beat Ferrari.
Yes, indeed. And there was a gigantic program that offered a lot of seat time, you know. And I offered my service. I says, I want to be at every test. And we should do some 24-hour tests.
Wow.
You know, like actually straight 24 hours, you know, with the two drivers alternating back and forth.
Le Mans is a 24-hour race.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah, so this is part of and that was golden for me. Because, and I befriended, especially, you know, Bruce McLaren. And I became really very good friends.
Who is part of McLaren race team right now.
McLaren racing team, of course. And he was McLaren, very...
That expensive McLaren car. There's like six of them in the world or something. And a billionaire owns one.
That's
is that the one?
That's the heritage. That's where they go back.
Just millionaire.
That's all.
Mario, don't tell me you have one.
I don't even know if Jay Leno has one of those. Does he?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Jay Leno has a McLaren.
He's got a McLaren. Yes, okay.
If he doesn't, he knows where to get one.
I just drove a couple of them at the Autobahn in Chicago just last week. I drove a bunch of those, all those McLarens.
So when we come back to Formula One, and because we probably touch on the endurance side of it, there's a thing that no one had really gotten to grips with that Lotus had in this 78-79 season called ground effect.
Well,
now that's going to have a massive impact on the championship.
Yes, indeed. And actually, all of this came about just at the end of the 76 season, which obviously I was part of. Uh-huh. And the best part is also we won the last race in Japan, you know, that season, which is nothing better than winning the last race of the season, you know, to give everybody vitality, you know, and just that, and can't wait to see what we're going to do the following year. So every year, obviously, there's a new car that's going to be born, you know, from what you learn, because you progress. And so we were all having a meeting, Hethel, and everybody had some input. And when it comes to the driver, you know, my input was, you know, as a driver, I said, you're dreaming about aerodynamic downforce, which obviously plants the car to the road and increases cornering speeds. But there's a penalty. The penalty is drag, straight line. Uh-huh. So the more downforce you put on with the surface wings, the more... You know, the resistance you have against the wind. So you go. So I says, I'm dreaming of downforce without penalty. So here we go. How do you achieve that? And so you go underneath the car to create a low pressure that can speed up the air underneath the car, but it has to be directed by body design. Just like an airplane. An airplane is designed both top and bottom surface to fly. So you turn an airplane upside down.
Because you want it to go
push down.
Yeah.
Instead of lift.
So this was the concept that was born by the racing car. But the fact that the air comes free underneath the car, there's no drag penalty. And so that was a breakthrough like no other, you know, in our sport.
Were Lotus the only team to have this?
We were the first ones, yes. Right. And we didn't come out and all of a sudden we had all the answers. It was a little by little, just hint here, hint there. I was I was testing in Germany at the Hockenheim, and it was one real, at the end of both straight, a real long right-hander. And all of a sudden, I'm arriving in the middle of the corner and I'm feeling the car sucked down. Why? Because we needed to close the sides to the road so the air would not escape off the side. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're just learning something.
It was a little apron.
Apron, yeah. So, we were learning things and then learning how to, you know, to change the diffuser angles in the back, to change the center of pressure, to give it balance. You can't have all the pressure in the front or in the back. So there were a lot of, you know, things, but we were onto something. And that's how the ground effect started, you know. And
I was all ready to add to this, but I have nothing to add because you said everything perfectly.
So this is, I'm a scientist.
That's why we're going to add that to the resume.
Certified. So just to be clear, when we see cars that have spoilers in the back,
right?
Yes.
If you pitch the spoiler to be at a very high angle,
right,
that can put a lot of down pressure on the car, that's giving it stability. That's but just like you were saying, that impedes your forward motion.
Right.
Exactly.
So you win in one place and lose in another.
Exactly.
And so
it's a compromise.
This is a complete act of brilliance to say airplanes get lift without disrupting their forward motion.
Yeah.
Let's turn that lift into a downforce.
Downforce.
That increases the friction between your cars and the tire, gives you more grip.
What you need on the turn, and it
serves at every point in your race.
It's amazing the cornering speed that the cars are capable of today. And as a matter of fact, a lot of the design is restricted to the point that you could make it so the car will just be right, you know, just like on a track, you know what I mean, without any slippage or anything else. So,
but they restrict it.
It's by rule.
Why? Why not go all out?
Because it's Formula One and it's rules for rules.
You have to do that because number one, I think a lot of it has to be. The onus is on the driver also to understand if the car moves around. The other thing is, if the cornering speed is such, and if you have a suspension break or something else, you're going to have a fatality immediately.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, so there's, you know, there's a balance to everything, you know. So that's why you have, and the rules are actually very well studied. And there's no magic wand, you know, to have it everything perfect. But, you know, as much as we know today, you're still chipping on it here and there and try to find compromises of sort, you know. You still
want
to
maintain
change? It.
Just one thing.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
A page that you're done with.
All right.
This one here?
Yeah, go for it.
You're done with that one?
Yeah.
Okay. Let me just show you something here. I'm going to take that.
With pleasure.
For everyone listening, Neil is just ripped a strip of paper.
He's just ripped everything
up. I forgot. Many will hear us only on audio. Yeah, I just ripped a sheet of paper, and now I'm holding the paper up from one edge, and it's drooping over
the side.
So I'm going to blow over the top of it.
Okay.
And I'm going to have fast-moving air above.
Over the top.
And you would think it would keep the paper pressed down.
Right.
But in fact...
It lifts the paper up.
It lifts the paper up.
To the point where it's almost...
So that if I invert that and put it down, it'll
push the pressure.
So this is just a little strip of paper way to demonstrate a Bernoulli principle.
I just learned something.
You didn't know about that?
I just learned something.
Good.
Now you can do this with your grandkids. And stuff.
Now you're an even better scientist.
Kids, this is what I've been doing my whole life. You just blow across the top of the page and it lifts itself up. That has lower pressure, higher pressure on the other side.
There you go.
That's it.
There you go. Yeah.
So when you're racing...
That's the point. That's
exactly it.
I wish I would have known that. Well,
this is the value of sort of the cross-pollination of science, of engineering, of fields. It's all aerodynamics, fluid dynamics is all the same thing.
Exactly. Yeah. It is.
So your racing style obviously suited... this ground effect development, because this is the season you go on to win the Formula One World Championship. Was it a case?
But wait a minute, was it you that won it, or was it the ground effect?
Both.
There you go.
Which, you know, well, that brings me to another question. Here's another question. What is the most important element for a win? Is it the machine? Is it the maintenance, meaning the team? Or is it the driver?
Well, I think the percentage varies depending on the track, where the demands are. But number one, I mean, it's team effort, team with a capital T, number one.
Okay.
Number two is obviously the preparation, because you have to finish a race to be able to win it.
Okay.
And then number three is the nature of the track. If the track, the layout, the course demands more of the car, in other words, the car contributes 70% and the driver contributes 30% as far as the performance, that means that there's a lot of high speed. The car better be quick, give you all the legs that you need, you know, to be competitive. And then you get
The car's just going all out.
You get to a course where you have a lot of straightaways, and there are, say, go to Monza, for instance,
and then go to
Monte Carlo.
Yeah.
Monte Carlo, it's 80% driver, 20% car.
Right.
Monza, it's 70% car, 30% driver.
Wow.
And those percentages vary everywhere you go, every track. But, you know, bottom line is, will it, at the end of the season, will it be 50-50 perhaps? you know. But so, you know, everybody has to contribute. But I would say the best driver in the world cannot win unless the car is capable.
Wow.
You know, so it's
and these developments, simple. I loved your metaphor where you said each year a new car is born,
yes.
A new kind of advance. And I don't think most of us are aware that these advances, many of them trickle down into just regular old cars that make us safer or faster or more aerodynamic. Mm-hmm. So it's not just crazy people racing fast. It's a frontier of experimental research.
No question. This is why you have the major manufacturers involved in the sport, because there's a
sense. It helps them. Their R&D.
It does. You know why? Because there's a sense of urgency in the sport when you have direct competition, like right now. Mm-hmm. Things have to happen today.
Well, GM beat me today. I better up my game tomorrow.
Not okay, mañana, okay, we'll get things done, okay. Mm-hmm. You know, push the can on the road and all that. We'll be fine.
You're not fine. You lose the race.
It's now, you know. So, and actually many of the manufacturers, they bring in engineers that are proper, you know, production engineers, sometimes even to frequent some of the, you know, be some of the races, see how the urgency factor plays.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think the sport, when you look at...
Do you find yourself searching for true crime podcasts that are different from what you're always recommended? Do you want to make a real difference in the cases that you're following? Well, you're a crime junkie. And I'm Ashley Flowers, the creator and host of the number one true crime podcast, Crime Junkie. There are hundreds of episodes already available, and each Monday we dive into the details of cases spanning from some of the most infamous to those that you have never heard covered before. Listen to Crime Junkie podcast now, wherever you're listening.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
The developments over the years, the safety aspect of it, how so many things, you know, are just drawn from that. I mean, features such as the disc brakes. Disc brakes were first, you know, actually employed in a racing car. They were born there.
Yeah.
You know, so many other things.
The disco brakes. Yeah.
Chuck, one was confusing them with the disco brakes. Yeah.
Maybe they have some disco brakes. I have to look at that.
You got
to
look at the disco brakes.
I have to look underneath.
All right. While you two hit the dance floor, we'll hit a break. We're going to have more. And if you didn't realize that what you're driving today and for maybe the last 20, 30 years owes a lot of its origins to great racers like Mario Andretti. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm putting all the burden on you. We're going to take that break when we come back. More from the great man and, of course, Neil and Chuck and myself. So stick around.
We're back. Star Talk, Sports Edition. We're talking about race car driving in the Sportiverse with my guest co-host, Gary, yeah. Chuck. That's the Jetsons. Come on now.
Close enough-ish.
I've got you on loan temporarily from Playing with Science.
Yes,
thanks,
sir,
for joining Star Talk flagship.
And, of course, we have one of the greatest of all time, if not the greatest driver of all time, Mario Andretti.
Racing royalty.
Absolutely.
We've been... Viceroy of Velocity.
I have to ask him.
Yes.
When did you first learn? Because I was embarrassingly old when I first learned that race car spells race car, but in both directions.
Oh, I just learned something today.
No, are you serious?
I didn't know that.
Yes, race car is a palindrome?
Yes, it is.
Oh, yes, race car.
Amy, why didn't you tell me?
Look at that. Nobody here knew that?
I didn't know that.
I was like 80 years old before I found that out.
You know what? You never too old to learn.
You got to come more often.
I got to come
more
often.
We can teach each other. Mm-hmm.
So the great thing is you return to the USA. You are racing for Newman Haas. And the Newman part of that is the Oscar-winning actor Paul Newman. Now that for me isn't the big deal.
God, I love his spaghetti sauce.
Isn't it great?
I just had his lemonade the other day.
Did you really?
Very good.
We're back to food. It takes you a millisecond to get onto the subject of food.
But he also liked car racing.
He did.
Yes.
He did. But your son, Michael, joins you as a teammate. And this is the first time in history there's a father and son partnership in IndyCar racing.
Just for the 24-hour Le Mans, because you switch off drivers, is that right?
No. This is just a team.
Yeah. Racing team.
Yeah. Two cars.
Two cars.
Not everyone likes their son to follow in their footsteps, but you obviously didn't have a problem.
Well, no, because he was racing regardless, you know, with another team and so
Sounds like someone else we know.
Yeah, yes, indeed. In fact, I mean, it was obviously the sense of pride to have Michael to be so competitive. We've had also the other son, Jeff, you know, that was also a racing driver, but he was not as fortunate as we were. You know, he had a terrible accident in Indianapolis in 92, and so that pretty much ended his career. But with Michael, you know, for him to become my teammate, he was at the very peak of his career, of course. And we had some really great success as teammates because I'll give you the statistics. We were on podium, top three, as long as he was racing, and 15 times.
The two of you
in the top level.
Wow.
And we started on the front row 10 times together.
Wow.
And we finished first and second 5 times.
Wow.
So did son let father win?
You know what? Once. No, he
didn't.
He didn't let me win, but he should have won. And he had a fuel pickup problem, and this was in Portland, 1986. And actually, I nipped him right at the start finish line, but like 2 inches, one hundredths of a second.
But that was a great drive home.
And it was very quiet. But I'll tell you what.
You can't have road rage against your dad.
Wait, it was Father's Day. It was Father's Day. And Michael, he was not happy on the podium. And then somebody said, Michael, lighten up. He said, it's Father's Day.
Okay. Happy Father's Day, Dad.
Happy Father's Day, Dad. Rumble.
All right, let's fast forward. Not to dismiss what you achieved, because Michael actually went to Formula One as well, didn't he?
Yes.
He did. But you now have a two-seated racing car?
Well, yeah.
Right now, in the present day?
I drive for a team that actually fields these cars, which give rides to fans and journalists and, celebrities, if you will.
Oh, so this is just one car? It's not like a circuit where there's two...
One car with two seats.
Right, but I'm saying,
it's a racing car.
A racing car of...
No. It's you give rides, you know, on a weekend when there is an activity, you know, you got a race. This past weekend I was at Elk Lake, Wisconsin, called Road America. Fabulous 4-mile road course. And so I give it rides there. You know, usually, like I said, a lot of press. They love to have... But, you know, what's cool about this is really, I don't know, a better way to showcase our sport because it's a very non-participant sport,
right?
if you will. It's not that you can pick up a tennis racket and then...
Good point. I can't do it in my backyard.
Right.
In the playground.
You can only do it on Super Mario.
Right.
Super Mario Kart.
And it's hard to explain.
That's the same thing, isn't it?
It's the same thing.
Yeah. Okay, so we have this racing car with an extra seat.
And Donkey Kong somehow fits in the car.
So
like
if you
else.
Show up to the next race, I'll give you a ride.
Oh,
if I
ever have a space capsule that
any,
I take
any
a
of
time,
you, any
I'll
of
give you.
You
a seat in the space capsule. Okay.
What speed, Mario? What speeds are we talking about going here?
Well, it depends on the track. I mean, it's any road course, like where I was this past weekend, you know, about maybe 175, 180 on a straightaway. But at India, I could give laps, like lap times of over 200.
Oh. You know? Yeah, I love it. So let me, I got to interject here.
Just go on.
Because we're, I don't know how much more time we have, but I have to ask. Cars today are really different from yesterday. I mean, from decades ago, yeah. Right? In terms of technology, in terms of the engineering.
Everything.
Is there a point where you said, you know, this, we're losing the driver here because the technology has taken everything over. Is there an old fogey moment where you say, you know, in the old day, in my day, it was all about what we could bring to the car. Now it's what the car is bringing to me.
Well, yeah, that's another darn good question, actually, because the technology, the way, as much as we know, you could have a car that would be so easy, so much easier to drive. And many of the cynics today, you know, will say, oh, yeah, these boys, you know, man, you know, the drivers of yesteryear, those were the champions.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Those were the gladiators.
That's like, get off my lawn, you know, and all
that
argument.
Well, the only thing is that I think the drivers of yesteryear, they didn't have the safety aspect, the safety features that the drivers are enjoying today. That's one thing for sure. But as far as what's the onus on the driver, that's why you have rules in place. Because you drive your car, you know, your present pleasure car. You have all this, you know, traction control. You have all the power steering. You have all this thing. Well, in the race car, that you're not, you don't have all those beauties. You know, you don't have a lot of that assist. So you still, that's what they wanted. You know, the rules are to keep it still a sport. Make the driver,
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it runs away with itself, and you're just an occupant
you
in a
could
seat.
Have it, yeah, you know, just another quick example is, you know, to balance the car, you have wings that you can change.
You can alternate the time.
They have it so, you know, the mechanics have to do it, like during a pit stop. Mm-hmm. And then I get something from engineers, and to send you a design, a schema that, you could do it with a button inside. Of course you could, but you're not allowed. You know what I mean? There's so many things that have to be done manually to keep it a sport, keep it real. So, again, it's still... You know, it's still a sport, you know.
Because if it runs away with itself, then you just have AI competing against AI.
Right, exactly.
And AI drivers,
you
right?
You just sit in the car and listen to the radio.
Which brings me to this thought. You know? What is your opinion on driverless cars, and would you ever get in one?
I knew you were going to bring that up.
The driver of the century,
driverless
cars.
How do you feel about driverless cars?
What kind of stupid question is that?
What's that big gray thing in the corner?
No.
It's an elephant, right? So he has to be addressed.
The elephant is here, yeah, okay. Of course.
Elephant in the room.
But
okay.
Don't talk to me about it.
Good.
Easy answer. I mean, it's out there, you know, of course. And can you imagine that's probably the end of our sport as we know it?
No, I don't agree. Let me tell you why.
It's actually going to increase the popularity of your sport because people will be so curious about what it is to drive a car that... People who actually drive and drive on the level that you drive will be like gods among us.
My kids have no interest in ever driving cars.
Right.
They're 18 and 22. They can't wait for self-driving cars. And they don't want to drive a car. It is not in their future. They don't care.
But they grew up in New York.
That's true.
That's a different
story. But here's my thing. Here's where I agree with you, sort of. Okay? 1905 to 1920.
Okay.
The civilized world transitioned from horses to cars very quickly, quicker than anyone would have. We had horses for thousands of years.
That's right. Yeah.
And by 1920, you couldn't give away a horse.
Because
okay?
We still love horses.
Hang on, but that's my point. So as cars replaced horses on the road, the people who still loved horses would go to horse stables to still ride their horses and go over the jumps. And so it became a place where you would take your hobby. So I'm suggesting that in the future that Chuck is commenting on, the roads will just be driverless cars, but there'll be these tracks that you go to.
Car
farms. You park your race car at that track, and it lives there.
Right.
And then you take a self-driving car to your race car.
So you can drive. Right.
And then you can drive 200 miles an hour. And then that's your Saturday afternoon outing.
You know what? Those country clubs of driving.
There you go.
Already exist.
Oh, really? Yeah. I wouldn't know. I'm black.
Not all country.
and you're more than welcome there, by the way, Chuck. More than welcome.
Thank you, Mario.
Indeed. It's not all country clubs.
Oh, okay, all right.
No, they're everywhere. Yeah. Actually, more popular.
Like a car club.
It's actually a facility where you have the beautiful layout of a racetrack, and with all the amenities and the safety features and all of that. And it's organized, you know, you have, the corner workers, and all the things there at the professional racetrack. Sweet. But you can go there, you can become a member. You have a Lamborghini, you have a Ferrari, you have,
So you can bring your own personal car.
Bring your own personal car.
And drive it in a professional track setting.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Exactly. I was just there.
How do they feel about me bringing my Toyota Highlander?
You can bring anything you like. Actually, you can bring a Yugo if you like.
You don't have any Yugos here.
We used to have Yugos.
Oh, you used to.
They put you on the Yugo track. That's a different track.
Oh, right.
Yeah. It's a slower track.
No. No, it's a communist track.
The wall at the end.
Awesome.
All right, let's look at what you've done after
Just one thing. You know, Manhattan has a classic car club. So you don't, there's not a racetrack, but you can go rent like a
Lamborghini.
We were
there last week.
Oh, you were there, yeah. So it's just rented for the weekend, for your date.
On the West Side Highway?
Yeah, right there.
I've been there.
Yeah, I just looked in the window.
And I drove a Lamborghini right in where everything was happening.
Yeah, but it's there. It's very cool.
Everybody was having some drinks at the tables and everything else. I drove right
It's a
in.
Tremendous waste of horsepower driving it in Manhattan,
right.
But nonetheless, it looks good.
However, I got to tell you this. I would certainly think that I drank too much if I'm sitting having a drink and I see Mario Andretti fly in. Like, did that just happen?
No, I didn't.
Nah.
Yeah.
All right, we got to stop. We've had enough.
Put down
we've
a drink.
Okay, so. What? Okay. So let's relate the wine to the cars. Mario, there is a winery in Napa, Andretti Winery, that you are vice chairman of. How on earth do you get involved in the wine business?
And how on earth do I get involved with you getting involved?
With the wine.
In the wine business.
Well, if you have a weak moment in your life, talk to me. Because that's how I got involved during a weak moment in my life.
Okay.
And that's why I brought in a chairman, because I didn't want to be the chairman. I didn't want to run. I just wanted to drink the stuff.
All right, there you go.
We're very proud. Indeed, actually, we were just... we have several varieties. All the major varietals. Mm-hmm.
Red, white, and rosé.
Both kinds, red and white.
Yeah, we do, and... we have the usual varietals. We have Italian varietals, uh-huh. and so on and so forth. Right. But this week we were actually considered that one of the top five wineries in Napa Valley.
Really?
Which is very
well done, you.
Well, let me go look this up again, man.
It's really so proud.
Your phone might ring shortly.
It's a nice. It's a quaint. That you think. It's a quaint, it's a modest little winery, but it's very quaint and very relaxing. You can, you don't need an appointment. You arrive there at the tasting room and so on.
It's called a boutique winery.
I'm very proud of that,
actually.
Very good. Very cool,
we have a great winemaker, and our wines have meddled, and I'm very proud of it.
That's fantastic.
It's very important, actually.
Are we surprised?
Neil's going to have to buy a case so that we can check it out.
Are we surprised that Mario, former world champion in the NASCAR, his wine's meddled?
I heard that.
Are we surprised?
I did hear that.
Well, look, that's
right,
it.
We are out of time.
We've reached the checkered flag.
I have to ask one last question.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It is rumored, I want to confirm it since you're sitting next to me, that you once said, if you are in control of your car, you're not in the race.
If everything seems under control, you're just not going fast enough.
Wow.
That there is no greater wisdom.
No, there is
in life,
right.
than that.
Yes. Take that to the bank.
Mm. Our version of that in science is the day you stop making errors is the day you are no longer on the frontier of discovery.
Mm.
That's our version of that quote.
Makes sense.
Mario, fist bump on.
Man.
Let the record show, I just fist bumped Mario Andretti.
Right, which counts as a car crash.
Nice one. A little.
We got to bring this to close.
Do it.
All right, Mario, thank you. You've been a charming, wonderful host.
My pleasure.
And we should do this every week.
We should.
I'll be here.
Chuck and Gary, thanks for coming on loan from Playing with Science.
You're welcome. We've had the honor of being with Mario and your good self.
To Star Talk's flagship. And I've been your host, Neil deGrasse Tyson. You're a personal astrophysicist. And as always, I bid you to keep looking up.
Do you find yourself searching for true crime podcasts that are different from what you're always recommended? Do you want to make a real difference in the cases that you're following? Well, you're a crime junkie, and I'm Ashley Flowers, the creator and host of the number one true crime podcast, Crime Junkie. There are hundreds of episodes already available, and each Monday we dive into the details of cases spanning from some of the most infamous to those that you have never heard covered before. Listen to Crime Junkie podcast now, wherever you're listening.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.